Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of the What the Sheep podcast. And this is a very special episode of the podcast because today marks the 3-year, I said that right, 3-year anniversary of the What the Sheep podcast. So,
oh my gosh,
just want to say thank you to everyone who's been here from the beginning, people we've picked up along the way, people who still support us. We appreciate you all. It's been awesome. It's been a wild ride, and hopefully there will be more to come in the future. We do have this nice revamp of our little home here. But that's only step one of hopefully some more stuff that we can start integrating. But again, thank you to everyone who's supported us this long 3-year journey. It's been a wild ride. You know what else has been a wild ride? This whole week of Critical Role content. Not only did we get a new episode of Critical Role, we also got 3 new episodes of Vox Machina, and then the 3 that we had last week that we'll kind of talk about a bit. But we also got some pretty major announcements that Critical Role has revealed. Alana, you want to tell the folks at home what was revealed?
Oh my god. My brain is broken. So not only do we already know that we're getting a third season of Legends of Vox Machina, but we learned that they have eked out a first look movie deal with Amazon Studios. So what could that be? What could that look like? Is that an animated movie deal? Might they do a live action? I think it'll probably be animated. Let's be safe. But maybe we'll see some Calamity. Maybe we'll see some one-shot business happening with this, or maybe something new and original. Very exciting. And then they also announced,
and then the other thing,
and then just this little thing off to the side,
little.
The Mighty Nein getting their own TV show.
The Mighty Nein. Holy shit!
I cried.
I know. It's kind of like expected. Like it's like, oh, the next obvious thing with that for them to do the Mighty Nein. But
yeah,
I was 100%. Thinking like after Vox Machina had ran its course,
definitely.
Like
definitely.
Way later. Not this soon. And again, they said in the announcement that they're in early production still. So again, we're probably still like 2 years out, like maybe late next year
I
at
reckon
the earliest.
We'll get the third season of Vox Machina before we get Mighty
Nein.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. That's kind of,
but,
that's common where I'm
thinking
about.
But still.
Very exciting. Very exciting.
Man.
We have been patient for so long. We just have to be patient for a little bit longer. And all of you folks here tuning in will have to be patient a little bit longer because we will talk about all of that and more later in today's podcast. But first, we have to go through last night's episode of Critical Role. Not too terribly much to dive into with this one. It's a very short and sweet episode, but there are some nice little things we want to talk about with Maury, then meeting some of Fern's old friends and all of that stuff. So we start this episode right in the tiki bar, making up some drinks. An interesting concoction of different stuff.
Yeah.
But again, one that they can't deny, as Fern said, that you don't wanna turn down a drink from Maury.
Mm.
Kind of great disrespect.
Isn't it like a rule of the Feywild that you don't accept food or drink from Fey creatures? I feel like that's
where you
like
don't accept it?
Yeah, no,
I guess
isn't that like a thing? You don't tell your name,
like,
and you don't eat or drink anything that's been offered to you. It's
probably.
Like, you know, that's a meta rule of the Feywild, but it's a general bad idea to, like, eat things.
It probably shouldn't, but I mean, Maury just looks so trustworthy and kind, so it's like,
definitely,
how could
that's what she looks like.
How could you not? How could
I
you
get
not
it.
Take that?
I get it, yeah. They've got Fern to kind of tell them it's okay.
They do.
Yeah, that was a cool cocktail. What was it called? It was like the moon's something? Oh,
glycerin,
shoot.
Moonshine glycerin or something?
Glycerin or something.
Yeah. But isn't glycerin, because isn't like nitroglycerin like an explosive or is it like... Or like something, a chemical.
Yeah,
I don't even.
100%.
I don't know. And I only know that because of Atlantis, the old Disney movie. Because nitroglycerin is like a joke that they use in there, and it's like an explosive. But anyways, off topic.
Moonlight glycerin.
Okay, moonshine. but I do love how everyone is pretty unnerved by this whole setting that they're in, but Ashton is just totally loving it and just totally game. for what's going on. Because I feel like in Ashton's mind, like, they're safe. Like, Ashton trusts Fern to some extent, and if Fern trusts Mori, and this is, like, Fern's old stomping grounds, what do they have to be afraid of? Like,
100%.
They're in good hands, and so Ashton's just taking it in.
Like, Ashton's probably the one that's seen the most shit of, like,
that too.
Most of them, so they're just like, yeah, this is fine, this is cool.
Yeah.
But no, it was cool. I like, like, the Dark Vision concoction, it gave them some cool buffs.
Yeah.
Interesting way to, like, kind of introduce how just this is a very magical place. Everything about the Fey world is magical and will have some kind of tinge to it.
Yeah.
And Mori's great. She's a cool NPC. Unnerved and untrusting, I think, in a healthy kind of way of her. But yeah, great design. Really cool kind of character. Character idea.
And I do like how Matt is kind of leaning into that, like, whimsical, like, unnervingness of this character.
Yeah.
Because in our first introduction of this character, it was very creepy. Just very, like, looming, just this very esoteric presence. And while that obviously still maintained in this episode, it was more whimsical. It was a bit more relaxed and chill and stuff. But
I think
still
a lot of it.
Pretty creepy.
I think a lot of it is she was very forthcoming. So it wasn't that she was secretive or trying to hide information. She was, like, they asked her questions and she gave them very kind of informative answers. I think if they'd gone there and they were trying to talk about, you know, the Nightmare King or what's happening with the Unseated Court, and she was kind of keeping stuff close to her chest, it would have made her way more untrustworthy. Yeah. But she's just like, no, you guys are friends of Fern, so I'm trusting you and I'm, you know, I've got nothing to hide, pretty much. Which, you know, could also maybe be a balance on the, oh, that's a bit disconcerting, the fact that they're so open.
Yeah, also on the flip side, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit sneaky.
But I love the two designs. I love the two kind of Moris that we get, like Head Mori and Belly Mori. The different voices, the different, that's an interesting, I'm not sure we'll ever get any kind of explanation of that, but that's a cool kind of concept of this dual being as
because
one.
Because then it, like, is it actually the same Mori, or is it two different entities? Because they acted similarly, but it's...
Maybe it's like a split tricky. Of her kind of being, and so the two aspects of her being.
As cool Felice is saying,
I like
chat,
it. I like Belly Mori.
We need more Belly, Belly Mori. What I was gonna say, just the everyone just taking in Mori and trying to, like, because Fern talked, you know, a big game about Mori and stuff, and so I'm sure they all had their own idea of what Mori was, who they were, what their whole shtick was. And now just seeing just the complete contrast of just, like, aesthetics, vibes, and stuff is a lot.
She's a lot for them. She's sweet in a in a Feywild kind of way, but it's a horrifying kind of, it's like we're going to grandma's house and you're like, oh, I don't want to go to grandma's house, it's weird. Yeah. Like, this is very weird and horrifying.
Yep. It's good.
It was creepy. There's a lot of creepy stuff happening at this place.
Oh, yeah. And what makes it even... I don't even know if it's creepier, because, again, we were kind of talking about this a little bit. The only other hag that we've really had experience with was Asharnai. And that was obviously a very evil or nefarious aligned, you know, individual and stuff. And the things that they collected and kind of feasted on or took as trophies seems a bit different. Than what Mori is collecting.
It's like same but different.
same but different. Maybe they operate maybe on different, like, principles and stuff. Or they're the same, and we are only just viewing Mori in the lens of, you know, a good aligned hag, a better aligned hag than Asharnai because of Fern. It could be that if we were strangers to Mori and we had no connection to Mori at all, this would probably be a very different meeting. Way different.
Well, she's very interested in, like, as you say, collecting and taking these things. So I think if Belzels had turned up, you know, without Fern, it might be she'd still invite you in, but there was that deal exchange. There was that, you know, taking and collecting of things. I don't get the sense she's a thief, if that makes sense. But
no,
like,
yeah.
She would make a deal or make an exchange, whether or not or not that's a good exchange to make.
I wonder if we'll get one of the Belzels making a deal with Mori at some point.
Because she said specifically she doesn't like interact with fate. She doesn't change or edit fate. So she's kind of what Ishaan and I did. Ishaan and I was able to, benefit people, or she was able to change fortunes, things like that. But Mori's like, no, I don't do that. I kind of just collect, and I like my collection. So maybe she's less about meddling with that sort of stuff and more just, you know, building a collection and offering help where she can. Because we don't really know what power she has, except for the fact that she's left alone and the Unseelie Court don't want to deal with her.
Yeah.
And the Seelie Court don't want to deal with her. So she clearly has power. I can imagine she would be like untamed wild magic, fey magic, spell casting abilities.
Yeah.
But we don't know to the extent what her actual power is in the Feywild. Archfey, almost certainly.
Oh, but yeah, 100%.
What does that mean? What does that actually look like?
Yeah. Yeah, so then could this... Do you think this, like, Swamplands is, like, her domain? Like, she made this place? Or is this just where she's taken up her home?
I think so.
Yeah.
Or it's gone like that since she's been there. Like, it's her influence.
It's her lair now.
Yeah.
This is where she's posted up.
It makes me so kind of, like, sad we didn't get the Ishaan and I fight in Campaign 2.
I know.
They were so close to fighting with her. It would have been really cool to see a hag fight.
Yeah.
But then we got blueberry muffins, so...
That's true. We did get blueberry muffins. Are hags normally fey? Or is that just kind of a thing here? Because
I think in D&D, they're... Well, actually, no. Maybe they're just humanoids. I'm going to look it up.
If they are fey, at least in the Exandria lore, I guess it could be possible that we see a Sharnai. If Ishaan decided to return to the
Fae realm
at some point. Ah, they're just a monster. Okay.
Checks out.
Yeah. That makes sense. That seems about right. Yeah. But Nana Mori isn't the only one that we got to meet this episode. We did meet a couple of other folks from Fern's upbringing, starting with Sweet Pea, an old old sun bear. Super cute.
Yeah.
Love that. Love that as they're giving.
I think I've seen a thing about sun bears. Oh no, it's sloth bears. Sloth bears are like incredibly violent and deranged animals.
Yes.
But sun bears are cool. Sun bears are cool.
Yeah, sun bears are chilling. And then we had Dr. Nesbitt. Did we meet Peepers? Wait, which one was Peepers?
Yeah, the rabbit with like the kind of
That's right. Yeah, with the eyes. That's right. Peepers.
Yeah, that was really cool.
That was really cute. And then Dr. Nesbitt. I wonder if all of these were Ashley's creation.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
This feels very...
I love Dr. Nesbitt. I love the voice. I love
so
the
cute.
Look of them. Personality. Yeah. I'm getting major like kind of Zazu vibes from The Lion King.
Yeah.
I love it. And,
but like a young Zazu. Before they became, you know, all uptight and stuff.
Yeah, I guarantee you there's like canon lore about young Zazu.
Oh yeah. Just, 100%.
But I love that kind of personality of like, I want to join, I'm nervous, and I have no information to offer.
Yep.
But
I
want to
be here. I'm here for the vibes. Like, what can I help with? Well, I'm a good conversation starter, I'm a good companion. That's about it. That's about all that all they got.
And like the idea that it looks like a putu, like with a big, wide open mouth. Like those things are horrifying.
Yeah. But, that tracks. That tracks being in the Feywild. But one of the other big things that happened during this episode was another dream.
Mm-hmm.
Which led us to having more confirmation that Liliana is involved and is aiding. Whether it be against her will or she's doing it of her own volition, she is helping with creating these keys, these devices.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, we kind of assumed previously.
Yeah.
But it definitely seems like she holds some kind of like a lieutenant status, kind of running the show, keeping an eye on operations and stuff. So.
Yeah.
What if we have to fight Liliana at some point?
Yes, that's what I want. This is what I want. Give me the trauma.
Man. Yeah, but yeah, it's going to be like an angsty one because it's going to be like, Imogen, I told you not to come here. Like, you don't understand the things that we are working towards. Like, we are trying to better the world. Oh my gosh.
Oh. Yeah, it'd be really cool. And I think we didn't so much get confirmation, but the assumption that the Bells Hells made was that she's in the Marquette one. She's somewhere in the desert.
Yes.
Which checks out. I think that checks out. She'd probably be with Otahan, and that's most likely where Otahan is.
Yeah, so then is it just the... Because Ira was fired by the Unseelie Court for this one. So now the Unseelie Court are the ones who are in charge of this key, but they're also not aligned with Ludinus. As far
no,
as I
they,
know.
We don't know their motives yet. Yeah. We don't know why the Unseelie Court want this.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I mean,
and
that, that just adds another.
Honestly, I can't really think of any reason because it's the Unseelie Court. The whole introduction we got to them is that, like, you know, they are creatures of fate and fancy and they do things on a whim. And there's like, not that they're unprepared or unable to plan. And
yeah.
But yeah, they're very much led by whims. So we don't know what could have spurred them wanting to do this. It could be something as simple as maybe they have Ruldusborn. We don't know if there's any Fae Ruldusborn. We know that Fern is Ruldusborn, but just not an exultant. Is that the word we're using? I can't remember.
Yeah. Is Ruldusborn not exultant? Yeah.
Yeah. So. Fae creatures can be Ruldusborn. Yeah. However, she was on the material plane when it happened. So we don't know. Maybe there are some Ruldusborn in the Unseelie Court and they have this connection and who knows, maybe they've been told things, other things to kind of bring it about.
Huh. Well, okay. So if you can only become Ruldusborn by being in Exandria, perhaps they learned that. And now since Ruidus is kind of like peeking through into the Fae realm, maybe they're trying to make Ruidus born, perhaps.
I think it could be something like the Rhaelora are communicating with the Unseelie Court to be like, hey, bring Ruidus to the Fae realm, like bring this power to the Fae realm. It's a power you can use because classically in the Feywild, the Unseelie Court are constantly fighting the Seelie Court. They could see this as a potential weapon or a potential boon that they could use in their battles against the Seelie Court. So we don't know their motives. We don't know what information they have. We don't know what their plan is. I will say I'm glad they're in the Feywild because it's really cool to go, but I was surprised they picked this as their first choice.
Yeah, right.
Like, this is the one
we're dealing with a lot of stuff here.
Nothing about. Same with the Shadowfell. It's just like, but you can kind of also think Shadowfell checks out. Like they would be doing shady shit.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh no.
We know nothing. Because again, with like Ludinus, we can kind of like theorize what their whole thing could be. And like loosely, we can kind of maybe get an idea of the Unseelie Court. But again, they're so out there. They're so random. They're so quirky.
That's true.
We don't know.
Ryan does say they chose the Fae for the time warp, and that is true. If they can manage to get rid of one and come back with not much time passed, strats, good strats.
They're using their noggins here. But
we
eventually,
don't do that here.
we don't do that here. We don't do any of that. But eventually, they did part ways with Mori and began their trek towards wherever this key is. On the horizon somewhere, but who actually knows how far away that is.
And there is that image of Ruidus in the sky as well, that they're making their way towards.
But it was like, wasn't it like, it was like in front of the mountains, they were saying, right? Or it was like weirdly phased?
It's not an image in the sky. It is a thing that is physically almost there.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Not how I imagined it, but I guess... Like it's just a fragment of its essence that is just manifested here.
I like it.
Yeah, not exactly what I expected, but totally makes sense for this. And we already had our first encounter with some unsavory folks.
Yeah.
In the centaurs.
It felt like too, and you know, it could have been just because of the moment, but I want to know how much of that was planned, because they were making those jokes, yeah, and they like kind of made like another really bad joke, and Matt's like, all right, that's it, and he went off and then brought the board back. I want to know if that was a potential encounter or if that was spur of the moment. All right, you guys, here we go. Fun either way.
Yeah, oh yeah. Just a very simple... Yeah. Combat. I always like the combats that where they're not trying to kill, and so then it's like, okay, how do we control this? How do we knock them out and all that stuff? It's an interesting layer to the fight.
Yeah, I enjoyed too the stealth at the beginning where FCG was found.
Yeah,
they're like we mean
no harm. Yeah, they're like,
how many are you?
Yeah,
that's good.
It's so funny. Oh my gosh. But speaking of FCG, one thing I wanted to talk about, going back to getting like dark vision from like the drink and stuff, and then getting like the temporary hit points, like the boon or whatever from the cookies. Like I love the idea of like making cooking like a relevant thing in D&D.
Yes.
Or like if you actually prepare something with the right ingredients and stuff, it can offer like benefits to your party. Yeah,
it's a different kind of magic.
Idea. Yeah, exactly.
Very halfling magic. Mm-hmm. Cooking as magic.
Yeah, but I just wanted to throw that in there because
I like
super love that that whole idea. But they were able to overcome this their first
they did good.
Road bump, I guess, if you will.
And they did pretty good. They were non-lethal for the most part.
The last one
kind of couldn't really be helped.
Was getting some Anna Ripley vibes with the attacks all lining up and now
they have a walking fog cloud to kind
of
protect
my god
them.
That's right. The freaking wild magic surge. That's so funny. Well, at least her hair didn't fall out this time.
Her hair fell out.
She turned blue, and now fog cloud. Are those the only three?
I think so.
God, I can't. Oh,
I think she's done butterflies. Has she done butterflies?
That was campaign two. Yeah, that was Isilcross stuff. Well, oh yeah, Ford also lost his hair, right?
Yes.
That's right. He came smooth forward. Yeah. Yep.
There was aberrant wild magic in Aeor.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Smooth. Oh my God. Smooth forward.
Forgot about that. Oh. Which just makes me want the Mighty Nein series even more.
Oh, my God. I've been... Oh, can we talk about it?
Let's talk about it. That's basically what, you know, episode 46 was. Not much to talk about. But, yes, the Mighty Nein series. So, I talked about this a lot on my stream yesterday.
Yeah.
And, like, the main thing that we were trying to, like, figure out is how are they going to tell this story? Because it is very, like, piecemeal. There aren't too many like arcs that connect across many episodes.
It's more of a journey plot than a quest plot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like it's going to be, I think, very much focused on the characters. I think they're going to have obviously, you know, set goals for each season, which they did in the campaign. But as you say, it's not so much we need to save Whitestone or we need to stop the Chroma Conclave. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very much of we're dysfunctional. We kind of work together. Where are we going with this? And I think, you know, eventually it will solidify into something more important. But I've just been spending this whole like last couple days just thinking of little things and constantly like just remembering, just kind of like, oh my God, it's happening. This is amazing. But thinking of all the little things I'm excited about seeing and hoping that they include them.
Yeah.
Because there's just so many little bits.
Yeah.
In campaign two, and I feel like personally campaign two, I mean, that's the one I first started watching. It's the one where I made all my Critical Role friendships with, like all the people that I've met through the Critical community was during the Mighty Nein.
That's how this podcast started.
Yeah,
with the Mighty Nein.
Yeah. I'm so excited. I keep thinking like, you know, we're going to get Kiri animated and maybe we'll get Spurt animated.
Oh, yeah. Oh my, 11 days. Oh my god.
Days.
Yes.
I win.
Oh my god, but it's so true because, like, again, like, obviously the Legends of Vox Machina being released was, like, huge and very, very exciting. Yeah. But again, I didn't really watch all of campaign one. And so, like, most people who had seen it were very excited to see certain things animated, where I was just like, oh yeah, that'd be cool. I don't remember, like, watching it in the campaign, but with campaign two, I'm just thinking of all the, like, the attack on the Zauber Spire, seeing that animated, seeing Lorenzo animated.
Yeah.
Now there's, like, very specific things that I am so excited to see in an animated form. It's just, oh my god.
And I think it's so, like, when, a little bit of a skip ahead talking about Vox Machina, but when I was watching the first episode of the second season and the Chroma Conclave were attacking.
Oh my
and
god,
like,
that was so,
so
cool.
Many excellent shots of Thordak, but there was just like one shot of Thordak, and I think it was them flying together as a group towards the city. And I paused and I was like, oh, like, I'm feeling feelings right now.
Yeah.
This is so, I use this word too much. I know, when it's not always appropriate, but it's so cathartic watching it. Feeling just like this thing that means so much to so many people is now presented in a new way to enjoy. And you can just tell the love and the passion that goes into these things. So yeah, I had a real moment watching it. And I've had that moment like 50 times in the past 2 days thinking about the Mighty Nein.
We'll actually get all of those amazing things. Like,
we're gonna get like at least 2-3 seasons of Cowboy Ford back as well.
Oh yeah, 100%. But freaking seeing like the level of like love that was put into the Chroma Conclave in these handful of episodes we've seen so far, like, imagine that level of like Lucian, the Nonagon, like, fully evolved with the eyes and stuff. Like, imagine seeing that fully animated and stuff.
Yeah.
With the same level of detail and just, oh, so much. But yeah, talking about the Legends of Vox Machina, this second season has totally blown me away in terms
it's
of just
wild.
Production quality and everything.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's insane.
It sounds weird. It sounds weird to say, but the characters feel more like rounded or fleshed out, I guess. Or like, I don't know if it's just the first season. Maybe when they're making it, they didn't know if they're getting the second season at the time. I'm not sure the timing and everything, but it felt in some aspects the character development couldn't necessarily happen too much. One, because it was a major focus on Percy's character, so he got a lot of the growth, but I feel just so far already, the characters feel so real, and just I'm loving them all getting their own moments and chances to like expand and explore. Oh gosh. And you're right, the production value is like
out of this world.
Incredible.
The
animation looks so good.
Yeah.
The music is incredible. The sound quality is incredible. There was this moment in episode 4, so slight spoilers if you haven't seen the most recent episodes that just came out yesterday, but in episode 4 when they're fighting the beholder, the beholder. The sound design of that creature,
that was creepy.
Like, I took it back to watch it because it's like that ramping up almost industrial noise, like power noise. I love that kind of thing. It reminds me of like Godzilla.
That was amazing. Speaking of Godzilla, in that first episode, Thordak got his own like Godzilla moment with like the flames igniting along their neck, and then like the fire turning blue with the jet engine sound. Like, oh my! I got chills when I had watched that. I was like, holy shit!
The explosion of his breath, when it hit its peak and caused essentially a mushroom cloud to like appear over the bay. Wow, that's scary. I'm like terrified.
I was
how do you fight that?
I don't know. They are really dialing it up with showcasing their power, but I had the pleasure of being in a theater for those first three episodes. And for that moment, that blue fire moment, like, everyone was like, oh, like, holy, like, everyone had to catch their breath. for that one.
Even seeing like a really cool thing that I liked was seeing the difference between Raishan and Umbrasil's attack, because for the longest time, poison and acid, they, you know, you get your kind of green, you get your kind of similar-ish breath weapons. I like the way they differentiated the way those kind of gruesomely killed people. But I love Umbrasil. Umbrasil is like one of my one of my favorite fights in the first campaign, and just I've always loved black dragons. So he's so cool. He's so evil.
It's so interesting because I never really put a lot of thought into what a breath weapon would look like, or like what kind of these effects would look like. And it's so like disgusting the way Umbrasil has the, like, the gullet just like heavy with the acid, ready to come out and stuff. Oh, and the wings dripping the acid as well. So cool. Yeah. Oh my God.
Very, very, very cool.
Absolutely terrifying.
And horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah. Very horrifying.
And then the size of Vorogol, the white dragon. Yeah. Massive. Massive.
Huge.
Because they're like the kind of the brutes of the chromatic dragons. And that's also terrifying. Like, you can go up against a smaller dragon like Umbrasil or Raishan, but just the pure force of the white dragon's going to be a totally different fight, different style.
Yeah, and we got a bit of a taste of the, again, spoilers if you haven't seen the three episodes from yesterday. We got a glimpse of what a fight with these dragons could look like.
I wanted to mention that. I'm really enjoying the way that they're kind of making the changes, one to make the story I think maybe a bit more seamless and a bit more not coherent, not to suggest that it was incoherent, but kind of play better for the 10 episode time limit that they have. But I'm really enjoying it. Like, I'm not enjoying the Sphinx, spoilers, the Sphinx dying. That upset me a lot. But I really liked the dragon Sphinx fight. That was a really cool addition. And as you say, getting a bit of a taster for Umbrasil and what they are like to fight. And now Umbrasil has Mythcarver, which is concerning. I don't expect them to necessarily use it. You got to imagine it's still a creature that can, you know, take the power of this weapon and be bolstered by it. My gosh, it's horrifying. And now they're separated. A very cool thing.
Because
of Grog.
Oh my God.
I like that they spent some time setting up Craven's Edge. Like, it wasn't just a one episode deal. Yeah. We got it over the episodes. And seeing Grog get more and more kind of concerned with it and get more and more kind of like, oh, okay, this feels a little bit like, like, knowing to hide it from people is when you probably know that something's not right. That's going to be a horrible kind of moment.
Not going to be good.
Guessing, my guess is going to be that they've gone to Westron. They've gone to Wilhand, I reckon. And then they're going to kind of have their moment with the herd while the rest are in the Feywild dealing with Singorn and and Fen, whatever that guy's name was.
Fenris?
Creepy Fenway dude. Fenris was the bow, I think.
Oh, yeah. Or Venthris. Or Venthris is the bow.
Venthris, something you're right. Like that. And then,
Does that mean we're going to get Artagan? Right?
I think so. That's what I was going to say. I think next episode we're going to get Garmili.
Garmili. What the? Oh, my God.
Surely, right?
Holy. Yeah.
Surely. They can't not.
I would think so.
They can't not.
Yeah. But anyways, just to like bridge like season one and season two, like it is such a big difference. And I'd kind of talked about this yesterday a bit, where season one, again, was brilliant in its own right. But it definitely felt like a Kickstarter season. Yeah. You know, it definitely felt like this was the crowdsourced, the crowdfunded season. And then season two is for sure like the Amazon backed full production quality season, which
it's insane. Really quite interesting. A lot of the shows you do see on Amazon, and like if you look at another example would be like what's it called, like Invincible or like mm-hmm. The Boys or things like that, they do kind of like very much let the creators and the people behind the projects just take control, because it's almost like there is a bit of a trust there of, this is your show, this is what you're doing. And you can kind of feel it, because it doesn't feel micromanaged, if that's
it. No, it doesn't,
like,
yeah.
There's
no,
been a lot of adaptations that haven't done well. But it's, it's really, you can kind of definitely tell, like, oh, this is a Critical Role production. Like, this is their story. This is the jokes they would make, which is really cool and just so exciting. It feels like, you know, I'm not going to get into Amazon as a company and anything like that, but it does feel like they've got a good relationship with Amazon to the point where I'm not going to be surprised at new announcements. I'm just going to be excited for them because, you know, of course we're going to get a Mighty Nein animated. Mm-hmm. Of course they're going to have a movie deal. Like, things are going well. They've kind of bought into a property that comes with its own fan base pre-made.
Which it's very
exciting
safe
for the fan base.
Yeah, it's a very safe fan base too, because we're very loyal. We are very dedicated to Critical Role Media and stuff. My concern would be is if they like oversaturate the content that they make.
Yeah.
Because I do think, obviously, Vox Machina is perfect. Mighty Nein is perfect. I think a Calamity movie is perfect. I know people will probably want like a Bell's Hells animated series, which I could see. Again, the Bell's Hells still needs to run its course.
I think a big part of it is letting things kind of mature a bit before you then move on to adaptations. Because I think with Vox Machina, obviously they had a lot of time before they kind of moved into the animated series, but they also kind of like tested the waters with the comic books. And, you know, we got little bits, we got tidbits, and it allows that kind of connection and that appreciation for the original streams and the original story to kind of grow and, you know, it's almost nostalgia going into these shows. And the Mighty Nein is the same sort of thing, but I would argue that the Mighty Nein is probably their most popular content, their most popular IP is the Mighty Nein. So it makes sense that they've moved more quickly onto this than they did with Vox Machina.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Obviously, because they've got the deals already assigned and the Kickstarter's already there. I would like to see if they do anything with Bell's Hells, that it is, they still wait some time since the campaign. I don't want to see a Bell's Hells animated series while Bell's Hells is still running.
Yeah, that'd be strange.
Which
be
I don't
strange.
Think it no, would. Yeah. I think if we're, you know, a year and a half, 2 years out from Mighty Nein, we're not going to get Bell's Hells.
For them,
Bell's Hells campaign's
like,
probably not going to last that long.
Yeah.
Or it could do. Or it could do. We don't know. We have no clue.
Who knows? We have no idea. But speaking of the different like medias that media outlets that Critical Role is using to tell their stories and stuff. We have, you know, comics, we have board games, we have the animated series, we obviously have their games and stuff, we have one-shots. The big one that I'm looking forward to next, if they ever do it, is like video games or games of some kind. Even if it's just like simple little pixel games, you know, like akin to like a Stardew Valley or something, where you're just on Caduceus's Grove and you're just tending to the gardens or whatever.
Oh my gosh.
Or if it's just
an
like a
idle
full-on
play.
Yeah, like an idle play or something like that.
Yeah.
I could see them tackling a smaller like video game project like that, like a mobile game or something. Or like a Switch game maybe. But it would be cool if they're making like a full-on like RPG story of like the Mighty Nein and
that would
that
be
art
cool
in the Exandria universe. But who knows if they would ever break into that space? No idea.
Yeah, if we're getting a first look movie deal, like there's reasons to expect there could be other movies as well.
Yeah.
Towards the end, I'm holding out for Calamity as the movie. I think it, because they are setting up, and well, we don't know, but I can assume they're setting it up. They've got the same animations, they're the same teams that are going to be behind the Mighty Nein series, that it is going to be connected series. So even if it's its own thing, you know, I don't think it's going to be the Legends of the Mighty Nein. It's going to have its own name essentially. But there is going to be connections, like, you know, Janet Varney might still voice Villia in season 4 in 10 years' time. But like, you know, there will be the idea that this is the same universe as this other show that you've seen on our streaming platform. And I want to see that with the movies as well. Like, you know, if they do Calamity, it's, hey, this is the thing that kind of kickstarted it. And I wanted to talk about the two. I'm loving all the Calamity stuff we're getting. They're really setting up a look for the Calamity.
Which is again, why I think that one makes the most sense, because we also have been getting a bit more like Pervan in this as well.
Yes. Yes. That was very cool. And he was horrifying. Yeah. Pervan was scary.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I want to... very little thing now that thinking about Pervan. I've seen in the trailers that there is a wolf that attacks Grog this season at some point, but I don't know where he's coming from, because I think initially he came from that bead that was able to
switch
hold it. They swapped that around with Zara, which I like. That was a cool kind of like way to have them fuck with them. But I want to know where Goldrick's coming from, because I love Goldrick so much.
I hope they didn't just take them
out. Give me Goldrick. Well, that's the thing. I want to believe the wolf that attacks Grog in the trailer is Goldrick.
Is Goldrick, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it could be.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe in Western, but I don't know why they'd be in Western, but...
I don't know.
I don't know.
We'll see. That was just a little tangent.
we'll see. But I'm excited for the next three episodes, because it'll probably be, I imagine, like... They'll be following two different storylines. Or are there 10 or 12 episodes in this season?
Probably 12, actually.
Yeah, if they're following like three.
Let's have a look.
So the next three and then the final three.
We've got titles.
We actually know.
Echo Tree and A Test of Pride. Ooh. So Faerom, I'm guessing, is going to be them kind of exploring and maybe running into like Singhorn and their father.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we might get the line.
Oh, like, yeah.
This is Lady Vexalia.
This is Lady Vexalia. Oh.
Echo Tree is the battle with what's his face?
That one.
It's Sildor, right? No, that's the father's name. Or is it?
Adam.
What's the name of the...
Adam, what's the name?
Adam. No, I'm racing Adam. I can race Adam for this.
Sondor. The same time.
So that's the Echo Tree. And then Test of Pride.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
That one feels
But then
pretty,
the episode after that is the Killbox.
Oh.
Got Killbox, Belly of the Beast, and the Hope Devourer. Yeah.
Oh.
Very exciting.
We already know what Hope Devourer is going to be about. We already know that one. Which is interesting, because then, are they going to kill all three of the rest of the dragons in season two then? I mean, they would have to, obviously.
Unless I could see them maybe doing, because they've kind of like, they've changed Anna Ripley's character a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. Like her kind of being involved with Umbrasil is like a new kind of feature. I could see them kind of being like, take on, I don't know why I can never remember the white dragon's name.
Vorgul,
thank you. Take on Vorgul and Thordak in season three, and then leave Raish on for season four as kind of like an antagonist, leading up with Anna Ripley, leading up to Vecna.
I could see that, yeah.
Because I feel like the fight with Thordak has to be like a big end of season fight. Mm-hmm. That's a massive
100%
thing. But then I'm trying to think, it could be like, you know, they do Raish on and, you know, Scanlan leaves, and then they set up a Tarion season.
We could see that.
But they're really, I like how they're setting up Scanlan's character a lot earlier with kind of the, you know, just want someone to love, feels like no one cares about them, doesn't have any strong connections. The comment of, you know, maybe love will find you. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to think we'll get Cali at some point. Here's the thing. I thought I think it's like the second episode, or maybe it's the first episode of the campaign, there's like a tiny little child that Grog's like, oh, look at you. And they look really angry. I thought that was Cali. And then everyone's no, that's Raish.
Yeah, that one. Wait, no. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I misread that completely. I didn't even notice the green eyes.
Yeah.
I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I had kind of thought something similarly too. I was like, well, wait a minute, who is that? And because I was in the audience, and the audience around me was like, oh, it's her.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh yeah, that's right.
It's
the deceased deceiver. That's right.
Checks out.
Yeah. But I think someone was mentioning that there's going to be about 5 seasons of Legends of Vox Machina. I think Sam was saying something about that. Obviously, nothing's official. But that would kind of make sense if there was about 5 seasons, because, you know, we have 2 and 3 for Chroma Conclave, 4 wrapping up Ripley, Raishan stuff, and then also setting up for Vecna. And then season 5 would be all Vecna stuff. Yeah. So,
and that would be, because they've also got to still... I mean, we can assume this season, well, we know this season, they'll get Vex's vestige, they'll get Grog's vestige. Mm-hmm. They still need to get Cabal's ruin and the plate armor and the spire. So they've still got
Cabal's ruin and Mythcarver, Ripley has those. Because Ripley picked up Cabal's ruin in, like, Marquette or something.
Yeah. So there's going to have to be they're going to have to fight her.
And I wonder, because I think they did have a tussle in Marquette. No, I actually can't remember if they ever even met Ripley and Marquette. I think they had just barely missed her.
They were tracking her.
Yeah, they were tracking
her. Yeah, because then they went to that island.
Yeah. That's right. I wonder if they'll just totally cut all of that traveling out and just have it all be in, like,
everyone's
Western.
Saying Whisper, too. Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. I kind of thought they might have just integrated Whisper into the Deathwalker's Ward. But that's really cool. Talking about how they're going to fight Thordak, seeing the way that the vestige actually works in the show, like, it is powerful. I like that they incorporated the haste and the speed.
Vex had initially
from his boots.
Yeah.
But you're like, oh yeah, this is a powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And there's a really cool shot, I think it's like when Vax is, like, going absolutely to town, like, destroying this Not Beholder. And, like, it cuts back to the group, and Keyleth is like...
Oh, yeah.
She's looking. She's perceiving.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying to chat. They've kind of incorporated the aspects of the Boots of Haste into the Deathwalker's Ward. Because I don't think it would be another thing. It'd be like, hey, I also got these boots that make me move.
Yeah, right.
I think it just makes
sense.
I'm hoping we get the wings at some point, too, because...
Oh, you already know they're going to be unveiled in, like, the coolest fucking way ever.
Yeah. Well, I think if they're unveiled initially when Gilmore pushes him off a cliff, right? Like, if I remember correctly, after the Rakshasa fight, I think it is. Like, he pushes him off a cliff and the wings come out.
I guess it could be in a silly moment like that, but if they're changing some things, maybe it would be something cool, like saving Keyleth or something.
Yeah, I like the way it kind of glows. Maybe we'll see if they go, like, that path of showing it getting exalted and like growing and changing, awakened. That's it. Yeah, awakened and exalted. Mm-hmm. I'm cool with it. It looks cool and I like it. I don't like that, you know, obviously we're at the sad part of Vax's story.
You
know, being haunted by the Raven Queen. I love that imagery of his fate line being tied to his sister.
Yeah.
And then she cuts that and attaches it to herself.
Yeah.
Very, very cool.
Oh, God. Oh, it's just setting up the angst for...
Setting up the
season.
Sad that I need.
Oh, God, I can't wait to see it animated. Oh, God, I can't wait.
Yeah. Jesus, yeah, so I forgot. I know, but I at the same time, I was just like, it's going to have to end eventually.
Yeah. We don't need to get to that episode. Just keep filling it with, you know, a bunch of filler.
Destroys me every time I watch it.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I rewatch it that scene every now and then when I want to feel sad.
Just to feel
sad. And just Matt's like, you feel a cold sensation in your chest, Vax. I'm like, oh!
Nope! Oh, fuck God. You!
It gets me. Oh, it's so good.
Lord.
Is there anything else we wish to touch on with Mighty Nein, Legends of Vox Machina, or last night's episode?
Just what a week.
What a week. Critters, we are feasting once again. There is so much to look forward to. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
But I suppose...
Sorry. I heard a noise in my kitchen and I was distracted for a moment.
No, you're all good. But I guess with all that being said, we can go ahead and call this one a wrap. So as always, thank you all for joining us. Thank you for joining us for 3 years It has been a long time that we've been doing this, so
well done.
Yep, we well made done it. Us. 3 years, yeah. Done and dusted, wrapped up in a nice little bow. So thank you to everyone who's come out and shown your support. Thank you to everyone who's watching this on the YouTube upload or on any of the podcasts, wherever this finds itself. Thank you so much for watching and tuning in. It means a lot to us. If you wish to support us further, you can follow us on our social medias or on the What the Sheet Twitter. Links for those are in the description down below. We post updates on when we're going live, when we take off weeks and all that stuff. You can also join our Discord server where there's a lot of fun folks in there. You can meet some really cool people that all share a passion of Critical Role. So be sure to check that out.
Yeah.
Again, links are in the description. So everyone, I hope you all have a good rest of your day. Don't forget to love each other. Spread the love to everyone you meet, everyone you see. The world needs more love in it. So, you know, make sure you spread it around. But also don't forget to love yourself. That's the most important thing you can do. So, you know, take care of yourself. Eat some food. Drink some water. Get plenty of rest. I'm proud of you. And thank you again. And so everyone, I hope you all have an absolutely wonderful rest of your morning, day, evening, wherever you may be on this glorious earth. And we will see you all very soon. Bye, everyone.
Bye.